my neck on the block. My chest suddenly felt tight. My throat was dry. Muscle memory again. And sitting in Harper's car last night. Suck it up, I thought, forcing my foot onto the first step. The train approaching Platform 1 is a southbound Bakerloo line service to Elephant and Castle. Please remain behind the yellow line at all times for your safety. I didn't need telling. Grey mice scurried out of its path as the tube tore down the line. It rumbled to a stop. The doors slid open and I got on. The carriage was packed tight. I held onto the handrail and looked around, grounding myself as the train juddered along the tracks. There was a girl in the aisle, a germaphobe. She'd taken off her coat, so she was obviously hot, but she'd kept her gloves on. Although the movement of the train was throwing her about, she didn't hold on to the supports. And every time anyone knocked into her, she flinched. She got off at the next station, whipped out a bottle of Carex gel as the doors hissed shut. The man standing next to me was wearing a wrinkled shirt, chinos and trainers. He was yawning and stank of sweat. The yawning and state of his clothes told me he'd been up all night. But he didn't smell of alcohol, so he hadn't been on a bender. A night shift, then. The Cartier watch showed he wasn't a blue-collar worker. The trainers said he spent a lot of time on his feet. I looked at his hands. The nails were trimmed short and the skin was clean and slightly red. Someone who kept his hands scrubbed clean. A surgeon, perhaps. I shifted to let him pass as we approached the next stop. As he turned, I caught sight of the name on his bag. University College Hospital. 2 out of 2. The train began to empty out as we moved up the line. Calmer now. I plonked down into a just vacated seat and took Jack's Agatha Christie book out of my bag. So much had happened since he had given it to me. Would I ever be able to tell him what I thought of it? Getting to the bottom of Sunlight wasn't just about Duncan anymore. It was about Wolfie, too. Payback for both of them. Chapter 98. Camden Town Tube Station, 10:45. We will shortly be arriving at Camden Town. Doors will open on the right-hand side. Please mind the gap between the train and the platform. The train staggered to a halt. I made my way to the exit, then hurried along the tunnels to the escalators and out into the daylight. Suddenly ravenous, I grabbed a steak, egg and cheese baguette from the subway by the station, gobbling it as I quick-marched over to Plender Street. A 6-minute walk past the barber shops and tattoo parlours on Kentish Town Road, along the run-down terraces on Greenland Road and Bayham Street, and I was standing outside Craig Bowden's place, a council estate property with a big green Camden sign slapped on the wall, and to the left of it a faded Look Out neighbourhood watch notice. Number 18 was on the ground floor. The paint was peeling on the front door, and there was a stack of black plastic rubbish sacks piled up against the wall, regurgitating beer cans, banana skins and pizza boxes. I looked round to check I hadn't attracted any unwanted attention. This was it. My last chance saloon. There were 4 names on Duncan's flash drive, if you included Diana Averis. 2 of them were dead, and Watkiss was doing his best to shut me down. Craig Bowden was the only one left to try. If he didn't sing, I'd have nowhere else to turn. Jack's always telling me that good stories need good sources, that you can't open a vat of worms without a knife. Sunlight was definitely full of Wrigley's, but I'd need Bowden's help to crack the lid. With everything else that had happened, I'd almost expected to see Do Not Cross tape on the door. But there was just a copy of The Sun poking out of his letterbox. It gave me hope. Unless the paperboy did his rounds late, Bowden was home. I rang the bell, waited a minute, and tried again. No answer. Was he out of town? I yanked the newspaper out of the flap and peered in. There was a strong smell of fish and chips, so in London, just not answering his door. I took a few steps back and looked up at the house. The curtains were drawn. Still asleep? I was about to ring again when I thought better of it. Waking him up was hardly going to get me invited in for coffee. I'll find a spot where I can keep an eye on the house, I thought, then come back when I see movement. As I started walking away, the door opened.
"Hey, was that you pounding on the bell?"
said a scowling man wearing stained tracksuit bottoms and bright orange flip-flops. There were grill marks down the left side of his cheek, and his hair was sticking up. I'd woken him then.
"Magic.
Craig Bowden?"
"Depends. Who wants to know?"
"My name's Ziba. I need your help. It's about Oak Lodge." Chapter 99. Plender Street, Camden, 1100. I'd had the whole journey to analyse the people on the train, but only a second to get a read on Craig Bowden. His jaw was clenched, but his eyes were wary. A man who'd learned to act tougher than he was, bullied as a kid maybe, suspicious of strangers. And compassionate too, I thought, glancing at the faded logo on his t-shirt. Fur is worn by beautiful animals and ugly people. Too right. I tilted my head and opened my eyes a fraction wider, deliberately submissive. I put my hands in my pockets to mirror him, consciously using my body to show I wasn't a threat. And when I spoke, I dropped the polish from my voice, my accent hardening to better match his. I identified myself by my first name only to put us on a level and show I wasn't here for any official reason. Then I asked for his help, a surefire way of getting someone to trust you. Putting yourself in a person's debt gives them power. Once I'd asked for his help, piquing his interest, I mentioned Oak Lodge. Thanks to Gavin Handler's letter, I knew the place had to have something to do with sunlight, but I still didn't know what, which is where Bowden came in.
"You've got me confused with someone else," he said, moving to shut the door.
I blocked him. "I know about Dale Redwood and the others." I was bluffing big time. Fact is, I knew screw all about Redwood, and I was only guessing there were others like him, given that business with his mate who'd hanged himself. But if you want to get someone to talk, you need to let them think you know more than you do, and that there's something in it for them. The door inched wider. I shot my next round. "We're onto the bastards. They think they're untouchable, but they're not." A rewording of what Redwood had put in his suicide note.
"We? You the police?"
Bowden's tone was distrustful. Not a fan of the old Bill, then. I shook my head. "Let's just say, I've got a vested interest in taking them down, and I'm working with one of the nationals to do it." He looked at his feet.
"You're wasting your time. They're too powerful."
Just what Dale Redwood had said. Who were these guys? "What makes you so sure they're above the law?" He looked up from his toenails, meeting my stare.
"Because they are the law."
Chapter 100. They are the law. If Bowden was right, that explained why Dale Redwood was so scared of them. And Handler's murder too. Despite the bomb exploding in my head, I kept my face neutral. The last thing I wanted was for him to think he'd told me something new. "I don't care who they think they are, no one's above the law." He laughed. It was bitter.
"That's what that MP said and all. Said he was putting together a file of names, was going to hand it into the Home Secretary himself. It was going to blow everything apart, he reckoned. But did it, fuck?"
MP. Op Sunlight. Why no arrests? Why was inquiry scrapped? Watkiss. What happened to DA? Gavin Handler, 9 months undercover. Where's the evidence? Craig Bowden, MP. Others. I thought of what I'd found on the flash drive. Up till now, I'd assumed MP was a set of initials like DA. But what if it wasn't? What if MP stood for Member of Parliament? The person Craig Bowden said had been putting together a list of names. And had he spoken to more people than just Bowden? Is that who the others were?
I had to work double time to keep my poker face straight. "Can I come in?" I said. "I promise it won't take long, and then I'll get out of your hair." Sometimes it's easier to sidestep the obstacles and go straight for your target. He dropped his shoulders and gave a big sigh. Good sign.
All right then, but it's a waste of time, I'm telling you.
I'll be the judge of that, I thought, following him in.
You're going to make me talk about the parties, aren't you?
He said. Parties? He swiped a couple of crusty kebab cartons and an empty Pringles tube off the sofa and motioned for me to sit. I set my phone to record. Aye, I said, the parties would be a very good place to start. Chapter 101.
Every time we went off to another of those parties, I'd get this ache in my belly. There were always loads of the fuckers there, all in different rooms, waiting. God, it was sick.
Bowden shook his head, ran a hand over his eyes. Sick. That could mean anything. He thought I knew what he was talking about, so he was skimming over the details. Craig, I need you to go back a step, right to the beginning, for the record, I added quickly. Why don't we start with who took you to the parties and where they happened?
She did,
he said, his face hardening.
That Diana bitch.
Diana Averis, the woman who ran Oak Lodge.
I thought you said you knew.
He gave me the bug eye. I do, but I need you to go into as much detail as possible. It's important.
Fine, yes, Diana Averis took me. A special treat for me and some of the other new kids, she said. Evil cow. She'd drive us there in this minivan. Avon Guesthouse. Devil's House, it should have been called. We were usually the last lot to arrive.
Last lot. It wasn't just Oak Lodge then. There were kids from other residential homes too. I made it sound like a statement, rather than a question. I didn't want to risk spooking him again.
Right, from all over London. None of us had parents no more.
Do you remember any of the other homes' names? He shrugged.
Davenport Lodge was one of them, maybe. I don't remember, though. We didn't exactly get to talk to each other.
Right, I said, as if that made sense.
When we got there, we'd get taken through the back to this room with old fart music going on. You know, like easy listening stuff. Frank Sinatra, that sort of shit. There'd be men talking to the kids, poshos in suits, and booze on the table. Cider. Alco Pops.
His voice trailed off. We'd get taken. There'd be. So these parties happened regularly then. And if there was alcohol, I could see where this was going. Something underhand, not quite kosher, definitely not above board. Bodie Calder's face had told me as much. Now I needed to hear Craig say it. What happened next?
It was always the same thing. It's a race, they'd say. See who can drink the most, fastest. Then after the drinking games, they'd get out these costumes and make us play dress up. Girls' things, fairy costumes, princess dresses, tiaras, for the boys too. I didn't want to. But I was scared of getting in trouble if I said no. There was this fat bastard who took a liking to me and this other guy. Must have been 25 stone with hot dog rolls on the back of his neck. Gave us sweets and made us sit on his lap for photos before the special games started.
Oak Lodge, run for profit, struggling financially about 15 years ago, but doing okay now. Kids. Bust in for sex parties. Pimped out by the people who were supposed to keep them safe. Is this what Duncan had died for? A paedophile sex ring? I wanted to rip my head off just so I had something to hurl at the wall. Bowden stopped and pressed his fingers to his eyes blocking the memories. His voice shook.
I'm sorry. I can't do this.
They can't hurt you anymore, I said, brain trying to process everything he'd just said.
You don't understand.
He looked up, his eyes wet.
I've spent the last 7 years trying to forget all this and put it behind me. It's why I never spoke to the filth when they tried to get me to talk 2 years ago. Fuck all happened with that MP, despite all his big promises. Nothing's doing, whatever I say. This is a waste of time. I told you before, no one can go near those bastards.
Compassionate, I'd thought when I'd given him the once-over outside. That's what I needed to play on, and I had no doubt that what I said next was true. It's why Sunlight's secrets were being so carefully guarded, and why people were being killed to protect them. It's still going on, I said. Kids are still getting hurt, like you were. The only way to help them is if you speak up.
I'm telling you, it won't make no difference.
It will.
What's it to you, anyway?
He said, flashing with anger. This vested interest you've got.
You want to be able to say you did something good, yeah? Something worthwhile, is that it? Well, guess what? This isn't a cause for me, it's my life. It happened to me, all right? And if it's all the same to you, I'd like to forget it ever did.
It's not just a cause for me, I said, matching his words and tone. It's my life too. My husband was killed by the men who hurt you. I may not have gone to those parties, but I promise you, this is personal.
Chapter 102. Bowden's face softened.
Fine, he said. But I don't want to talk about the parties no more. Got it?
I nodded. Okay, I changed tack. Did you ever try and tell anyone what was going on? He dropped his gaze and started picking at a hole in his tracky bottoms.
Once, there was a bloke who worked at Oak Lodge. I tried talking to him.
What happened?
He said the men were good people.
Good? I spat the word out. I couldn't help it.
Important, stand-up citizens, he called them. One of them even worked at Buck House, so he said, Queen's butler or something. The rest were judges, policemen, politicians, that sort of thing.
Politicians. That MP said he was putting together a file of names, was going to hand it in to the Home Secretary herself. But nothing ever came of it. Was the Home Secretary in on it too? No wonder Dale Redwood thought these penis peelers were untouchable. How far up did this thing go? Bowden was right. They were the law, and they'd have had the means to stop anyone who got in their way. Gavin Handler, Diana Averis, Duncan, Jack. I thought back to the snatch of conversation I'd lip-read between Watkiss and that civil servant, Rex Lutim. What if the operation had been reactivated in light of Redwood's suicide and the note he left behind? Did Watkiss have a hand in losing the evidence Duncan talked about? Was he part of the sex ring? If so, he'd have been worried what might come out post-Redwood. Question is, what had he done about it? A guy's been found hanging at his bedsit, friend of Dale Redwood. Police haven't ruled out foul play. Did he have a hand in that too? And if so, was he the CO or just a foot soldier? Do you know the names of any of the men at these parties, Craig? I said, straining to keep my voice neutral. He moistened his lips. I swallowed my smile. He had something. Just as he opened his mouth to speak, my phone buzzed in my lap. A text from D.I. Isakson.
New arrest. Got a murder weapon. When will you be here?
SMS, 11:28. Another collar so soon, and a weapon. I had to get down to the yard ASAP, but things were just coming to a head with Bowden, If I left now, he might not speak to me again. What should I do? Ever since I'd joined the MIT, I'd been sawing myself in half, not giving enough attention to either case. But I couldn't straddle the fence any longer. It was crunch time. Sunlight or slasher? I looked up from my phone, giving Craig Bowden my full focus. All I needed was one name to set the skittles falling. Then I'd go. Chapter 103. The sound of the text message coming through broke the spell. Bowden clamped his lips shut and looked away, picking at the grime under his nails. We'd come too far to stop now. Do you know any names? I said, my tone encouraging. Even one would make all the difference. He ran his tongue inside his top lip. I held my breath.
I know who he was.
He? Bowden's voice had gone quiet. He was rubbing the inside of his wrist with his thumb so hard it made the skin bunch.
The pig who used to make me sit on his lap. He was in the papers. One of those MPs what's been fiddling his expenses.
Fits the profile, I thought. Guy thinks he's above the law. What's he called?
Carter. Alistair Carter.
I knew the name from my internet trawl on Wednesday. Carter wasn't just an MP. He was the Parliamentary Undersecretary of State for Youth Justice. What a joke. He also worked closely with Rex Lutim in Whitehall. Another link to Watkiss. You're sure it was Carter at those parties?
Course I'm sure. You think I can forget that face? He should rot in hell for what he did to me and Tom.
Tom? This was new. Another name.
Yeah, he was the other boy I told you about. The one Carter picked to play with me. He was older than me. Always going on about how he was going to get his own back. That's why he kept hold of the photo.
I nearly jumped out of my seat. What photo?
Of me and him on Carter's lap, dressed like bleeding princesses. I wanted to burn the thing, but Tom wouldn't. He was going to play the long game, he reckoned.
How did he get hold of it? Bowden shrugged.
Must have nicked it. There were loads of them about. Polaroids.
I could have kissed him. If this Tom was so set on payback, he may well talk, and if he had evidence. Don't suppose you have his surname? I kept my tone light. I didn't want him freezing on me now. Bowden shrugged again.
No clue.
Well, was he at Oak Lodge with you? Maybe I could trace Tom the same way I'd tracked down Craig. He shook his head.
Don't know where he was staying.
Just when we were getting somewhere. If only we had that photograph. I let out a sigh. Bowden looked at me like I was nuts.
But we do have it,
he said. Chapter 104. But we do have it. What? I said, goosebumps breaking out on my skin.
Well, I don't have it exactly, but I can tell you where it is.
I leaned forward, not even trying to hide my excitement. The flash drive was one thing, but it didn't prove anything beyond a link between Duncan and Sunlight. And Craig Bowden's story could be just that. A well-spun dit. But with visual proof, well, that was a whole other box of bullets. With ammo like that, I could really tear things up. Go on, I said to Bowden, practically salivating.
It's buried under a tree in Trent Park.
My shoulders slumped. Bloody marvellous. Trent Park was spread over more than 400 acres. The photo could be anywhere. It was square, frigging one, all over again.
Tom reckoned it'd be safer if we hid it, Bowden said with another shrug. Said no one would find it that way.
Good thinking. My voice was flat. If no surname Tom had hung on to it, I'd have more chance of finding it than under one of thousands of trees. Crap knows where it is now, I thought.
Yeah, he was clever like that, said Bowden, not picking up on my sarky tone. Made us count 100 paces back from the third window on the left at the bottom of the house. Had to be a straight line, he said. Took us right to an oak tree. Massive it was. Must have been really old. We carved our initials, CB and TR, and dug a hole by one of the roots. He brought an old biscuit tin to put the photo in. Used to keep his toy soldiers and stuff in it, he said, but this would be a better use for it. And anyway, toy soldiers were for babies. He didn't play with them no more. That's where you'll find it. Under the oak tree.
Copy that, I grinned. Forget square one. I'd just passed go and collected £200.
You military?
He sounded surprised. With my height, I don't exactly fit the soldier stereotype. I was.
You got a gun?
I laughed. Not anymore.
But you know how to fight.
Aye, that I do. Chapter 105 Camden Town Tube Station, 12:15. Why has it taken this long for the photo to surface? I thought, as I hailed a black cab outside Camden Town Station. At this time of day, going by road would be quicker than waiting for a train and changing lines twice. I could understand why Craig Bowden hadn't been in any hurry to go back to Trent Park and dig it up, given his chat with the mystery MP had come to nothing. But this Tom guy was another matter. From what Bowden had told me, he'd been hell-bent on getting his revenge back when they were kids, so what had changed? Did he think the evidence would be suppressed? It's possible, given how powerful the players are, I thought. Or is it something else? Did they get to him too? I sighed. Without a last name, I'd never know. Scotland Yard, please, I said, hopping into the taxi. I called Isakson from the back seat. Just got your message. I'm on my way in. An arrest, eh? Who is it? I noticed the driver's eyebrows raise in the rearview mirror. This wasn't a conversation I wanted overheard. I leaned forward to close the plexiglass partition as Isakson told me the suspect's name. You sure? I said, the hairs standing up on my arm.
Yep, we got his prints off the weapon. It's definitely him. A couple of black rats gave his wife a tug last night. DUI. When they got her out of her vehicle, she pulled a knife on them.
What?
She was wasted, didn't seem to know what she was doing. Claimed she was on her way to her local nick to hand it over. Said it belonged to her husband, and she thought it had been used to stab Pejman and Abian. Reckoned he was coming after her next.
And that led you to him?
Well, not straight away, no. Like I said, she was two sheets to the wind. They processed her and sent her away with a £2,000 fine, and the blade got bagged and stashed in a cupboard. It was only later the skipper thought to take a closer look. That's when he noticed the blood.
How'd they miss that?
I don't know, Mackenzie. It was dark. They didn't take the woman's story seriously. Your guess is as good as mine. The skipper passed it on to his DCI, though, who made the link and handed it on to us. Lab confirmed the blood was a match to our victim's. We had the wife's name and address from the arrest details, so it was easy to find our man from there.
And the wife, where is she now?
Ah, well, that's the thing.
He paused.
We have no idea.
I don't understand.
There's signs of a struggle at the house. Blood, broken glass, furniture knocked over, but no sign of her. We've put out an APW, but there haven't been any sightings yet. When she was pulled over, she said she was in fear for her life. Nearly 12 hours went by between then and her husband getting nicked. Fact is, he could have done anything to her in that time.
Chapter 106 Have you started the interview yet? I said to Isakson. Maybe we can apply some pressure, re the wife.
Yep, Silk and Frost are with him. I couldn't wait for you.
He let the reproach hang. If things hadn't gone so well with Bowden, I might have felt worse. They did a good job with Fontaine, I said, as if I hadn't picked up on his barb. And they're obviously not big guns. That should stop him lawyering up. He'll think he's better than they are.
Well, he hasn't so far, at any rate. Odd, really. You'd have thought he'd know better, under the circumstances. How's the saying go?
You mean a man who represents himself has a fool for a client?
That's the one. Isn't it the first thing they teach at law school?
Actually, I think it's more likely to be egotism, I said with a laugh. From what I've seen of him, he'll think he can play the system. If he hasn't asked for a brief by now, he's not going to.
Suits me.
I should be with you soon, I said, glancing at the driver's sat-nav. In the meantime, remember what I said the other day. Intensify the arse-pucker factor. Make him sweat. Keep bringing it back to his wife. If she's the true source of his rage, that's his fault line. That's where you need to apply the force to get him to crack.
Sounds good. He's in interview room 3. I'll meet you in the obs room when you get here.
We hung up, and I stared out the window, digesting what I'd just been told. It was ironic, really. Despite all our legwork and the long hours we'd clocked up in the incident room, the arrest had actually had nothing to do with us. If his wife hadn't come forward, we'd still be out looking for him. Mind you, breaks hinged on chance happen more often than you'd think in serial murder cases. Ted Bundy was caught after police apprehended him driving a stolen car. The son of Sam was captured after his car was spotted parked illegally near a crime scene. And the Yorkshire Ripper was found when police noticed the car he was driving had false plates. I was just musing that maybe cars were the common link, and how that was yet another reason to go green, when my mobile rang. My stomach jumped. It was Jack. Chapter 107.
Wolfie, I said, how are you feeling?
My head's pretty sore, but I should be able to go home today.
Outstanding.
Thanks a lot.
I mean, it's good you're getting home, you nugget.
Oh, right. Yeah, it is. Food here's crap.
Voice not slurred. Speech patterns normal, making jokes, albeit rubbish ones. That's got to be positive, I thought.
I wanted to thank you. Mo said you've been amazing.
I haven't done anything.
Not according to her. She's off at Snappy Snaps getting fan shirts made up.
I laughed, my inside skipping at the sound of his voice. I'd really thought he might not pull through.
So, what's the prognosis?
Dunno. We'll have to see what deal she can get off the printers.
Wolfie!
It was my fault for laughing at him. He'd be telling shit aviation gags next.
What's the difference between a fighter pilot and God?
God doesn't think he's a fighter pilot. That's his favourite, and one of his better ones, which doesn't say much for the rest.
They've done an MRI, he said. I've got slight concussion, but no brain bleeds. And the other injuries are pretty minor. A few cuts and bruises. Broke my schnoz, but that's about it, thank God.
Roger that, I said, despite the atheist in me. When can I see you?
I'll be off work for a bit, so come over whenever.
You're staying at your place? Was it safe for him to be on his own, and not just from a health point of view? Those shit stains had gone for him once. What if they came back to finish the job?
Mo wants me to stay with them.
Maybe you should. And maybe I should sort out someone to keep an eye on him. My old oppo, Max, was bound to know someone. I'd make some discreet calls when I got off the phone. While I was stuck here at the yard, I needed to know someone had got his six.
Don't you start. Pop over this evening if you want. Have a bite to eat with me. There'll be plenty of grub. My mother's over there now, stuffing the fridge with casseroles.
I'd expect nothing less, I said, laughing again.
By the way, any news on Sunlight?
He said, his voice dropping a peg, the tone becoming more serious. No retrograde amnesia, then?
Yes, but we'll talk when I see you.
Okay.
And Jack?
Yeah?
When you get home, lock your door, put the alarm on, and don't let anyone in you're not expecting.
What?
Just stay frosty, okay?
I don't understand.
Like I said, we'll talk when I see you.
Chapter 108. Observation Room, Scotland Yard, 1308.
Everything okay with the teeth?
Said Isakson, looking up as I walked into the obs room, panda circles under his eyes.
The guy looked like he'd had even less sleep than me. You what?
The dentist. Surprised there was anywhere open on a Saturday.
Shit. I hadn't thought that one through. Emergency clinic. Nasty abscess, I said quickly. Very painful. He gave me a funny look and turned back to the TV monitor. On the screen, Silk was leaning forward, his fists on the table. Frost was twisting her necklace. Things not going well, hey?
You can tell that from one look.
I shrugged. It's what you pay me for.
His mouth twitched. A smile, I suppose.
This guy's cool as a damn cucumber. Hasn't told us anything.
He will when he hears what we've got. He's a clever boy. He'll want to cut a deal.
Right now, Tech would be running his car through ANPR, automatic number plate recognition. There are cameras all over London. If he'd been there, they'd find him.
Soon as we show him we can prove his vehicle was in Clerkenwell when the Vicks were abducted, we can lock this thing down.
We've already shown him the murder weapon. He should be talking by now.
Give him time. This one's not the sort to run his mouth off.
How do you know that?
Because I've spent time with him.
Alone, last night, without telling you.
What can you tell me about him?
What you see is not what you get. He comes across all charming, but it's an act. He's got a temper. Knows how to keep a lid on it, though. But when he makes a decision, he's quick, acts fast. He's in clean-up mode right now. You got my message last night. If he killed our Vicks, it's because of what he had to lose. So, he's someone who knows how to protect what's important to him, and he's ruthless about doing it.
I paused. Was it time to mention the car? I'd get bawled out for keeping it to myself, but there was the bigger picture to think about.
He's got a thing for me, I said. I've got no proof, but I think he might have been following me.
Just like the London Lacerator. He'd had a pash on me too, nearly got me killed.
Isakson nodded to himself.
That actually fits, he said. The crime scene guys found a stash of newspaper cuttings at his house. There were a number of things about you. Articles, photos. He's been doing his research, that's for sure. And it's not just the investigation he's been fixating on.
The person watching me at the crime scene. The dark saloon that had been tailing me along the Broadway. Maybe even the car outside my flat last night. I hadn't been imagining it all. I should have trusted my instincts. Dan Harper, I thought. It's true what they say. It really is the quiet ones you have to look out for.
Chapter 109.
I watched Harper carefully. Body language crosses cultural divides, an inbuilt response system that can't be taught or overridden. And discomfort's always the easiest thing to spot. He might be playing a good game in there, but he was sweating like a guy with a bomb down his pants. Nervous then, though hardly surprising. He was facing a multiple murder charge. He wouldn't be human if he wasn't arse-pissing himself. But that's not all he was feeling. He was leaning forward, his shoulders tensed, his eyes glued to Silk's face. All signs he was on high alert. I watched as Silk pushed a photo printout across the desk towards him.
A selfie of Yasmin Pejman in her birthday suit, said Isakson. We found it at his house.
You were right about the affair. Odd, I thought. It was careless, which didn't fit with the other precautions he'd obviously taken to keep the relationship secret. I leaned back, checking Harper's reaction. A pulse had started throbbing visibly in his neck. He touched his fingers to his throat. Not just pacifying, though. Harper had gone green. He felt sick. A minute later, he asked for a toilet break. Clever, I thought. Buying time to get his shit together. We'd have to work hard to get a confession out of this one, which didn't bode well for finding his wife. We need to keep pressing him about Pejman, I said to Isaksson. You saw his reaction. Isaksson nodded and paged Frost and Silk to come in. I briefed them on how to tighten the bolts. What is it, Mackenzie? Said Isaksson when I'd finished. I don't like that expression. He was getting good at reading me. I shrugged. Something's nagging me. This your gut again? Aye, and it's not just the dodgy sandwich I ate earlier. Go on. He sounded wary. Last time my gut had told me the guy he had in custody didn't do it, I'd been right. The evidence is obviously pretty convincing, plus Harper's local to Primrose Hill. He's in his early 30s and drives a black saloon. He has a high IQ and good social skills. But, said Isaksson, cutting in, he didn't sound happy. I also profiled the perp as small and physically weak, which the post-mortem supports, but Dan Harper's at least 6 feet tall, and I've seen the guy in rolled-up shirt sleeves. There's nothing weak about him at all. Chapter 110. Isaksson tugged at his necktie.
And if he's Mr. Big, then he's not impotent either, he said.
That's true, I thought. Was there another way to explain the absence of baby gravy at the scene? Or had I got the profile wrong? Harper's prints were all over the murder weapon. He knew both victims and was drinking with them on the nights they died. He lived near the kill sites. He was following the case closely. He was having it off with Yasmin Pejman, and now his wife had gone missing, leaving behind signs of a struggle at their house and traces of blood on the furniture. It was a straightforward shot, close range, massive target, the sort only a blind cherry would miss. And yet both the profile and the PM said he wasn't our guy. I'd been distracted. Had sunlight made me take my eye off the game? Could I have read this wrong? There was a knock at the door and Big Daddy walked in carrying a thick file.
You need to see this, he said to Isaksson, handing it over. What is it? Tech pulled it off Harper's home computer. Looks like his wife Sarah's been posting fairly regularly to a domestic abuse forum. Sounds like she was terrified of him. Has a drink problem too.
Another thing I'd got wrong. I wouldn't have pegged Harper as a wife-beater, though he was highly strung. I'd seen that for myself last night. I touched Isaksson's forearm and he jerked slightly. Doesn't like physical contact, I thought, pulling my hand away. Mind if I take a look, sir? You remember I said the wife was Harper's fault line. We might be able to use what's in here to get him to crack. Isaksson gave one of his brisk nods and passed it over. At least I wasn't telling him to cut the guy loose this time.
On second thoughts, get Harper taken back to lockup and tell Silk and Frost to meet us upstairs, he said,
cricking his neck from side to side. It made a twig snapping sound.
We'll all go through the file together back in the MIR.
He took it back from me, and as he did, something fluttered out. I bent to pick it up. It was a Polaroid of Yasmin Pejman lying on a bed, smiling up at the camera. Someone had stabbed through her eyes with something sharp. Multiple times. Chapter 111. I turned the photo over. The hole had gone right through to the other side. 5 in the left eye, 8 in the right. An uneven number, so nothing to do with superstition or voodoo. This is about hatred. I passed it to Isaacson. Pure rage. Isaacson took it from me. He sucked his lips, making a whistling noise.
Could Sarah Harper have done this? I think she might have known about the affair. There are references to a woman in there,
said Big Daddy, indicating the file with a jab of his head. I don't think it was her, I said. These marks were consistent with the sort a man would make. Vandalizing photos is something both genders do, I said, but when a woman does it, she scratches out the face, takes her time. A man takes a more violent approach, which matches this one. He'll rip the picture up or stab it with a sharp object, most often scissors or a knife. Like what's happened here. This could be the wife's handiwork, but it's much more likely Harper's the artist. Isaacson nodded, a quick up and down. The photo tells us something else. I stroked it with the edge of my thumb. Harper was angry with Pejman. Furious. No question, in that moment, he wanted her dead. Isaacson rubbed the back of his neck and exhaled through pursed lips.
We've got a link to him and Pejman. I just don't see where Abion comes in. Your pincushion theory from before doesn't seem to fit here.
I felt the same way. If Harper was stabbing a picture of Pejman through the eyes, that must mean their affair was over. An acrimonious end. But who'd broken up with whom? I thought of what Axel Montand had said last night about the attitude the firm took to that sort of thing. And what Pejman's sister had said about her and Abion being pals. What if Abion had stuck her oar in, threatened Harper somehow, or perhaps she'd pushed Pejman to end the relationship? Either would give him motive for hurting her. Although the profile told me this wasn't about Pejman or Abion, they were surrogates, stand-ins for the true source of the killer's rage. Most likely his wife. This was about her, not them. The signature showed that. Something about Sarah emasculated Harper, made him lash out. Perhaps that's what led to the affair in the first place.
I'm not sure, said Big Daddy, stroking his impressive stomach after I'd spelled it out. From what I've been reading, she was pretty scared of him. Terrified, actually. Sounds like he had some serious anger issues going on.
Doesn't mean she didn't undermine him without realizing it. Emasculation comes in many forms, I said. She could come from money or be better educated. Anything, really. Point is, if she threatened his masculinity, it could lead to the sort of anger you're talking about. And it'd likely escalate. Big D sucked his lips, his head bobbing up and down.
Makes sense. There's something else you all should know, though.
Something in his voice made me sit up straighter.
She's been posting regularly to this forum for a while now, sometimes several times a day. But there hasn't been a peep from her in nearly 24 hours. Not since she told our friends at Kentish Town she was in fear for her life, and they sent her back home.
Chapter 112 Major Incident Room, Scotland Yard, 1412.
If we're going to get anything out of Harper, we'll need to go through these posts, said Isaacson,
smacking the file down on the table by the incident board at the back of the MIR. Frost wheeled her desk chair over as the rest of us took our pews. The DI opened the file and began handing out pages, sharing the load, as he put it. I'd rather go through them chronologically, if you don't mind, I added, quickly clocking his frown. It'll give a better sense of behavioural progression.
Suit yourself,
he said, his voice weary, reassigning the sheets. There were dozens of entries. Harper's wife had clearly relied heavily on the forum. As Big Daddy had said, she'd often written multiple times a day, which of course made her radio silence now all the more disturbing. I hear my husband stomping about downstairs. He sounds angry. I can hear him cussing and throwing stuff around, There's the noise of glass smashing and a loud thud. I start shaking, but it's not because I'm cold. It was hard to reconcile her account with what I'd seen of Dan Harper. How had I got him so wrong? Persistent, prone to stress, sure, but domestic violence? I hadn't reckoned on that. Of course, that's the thing with abusers. They know how to put up a good front. It's usually only their victims who see them for what they really are. But still, I analyze people for a living. I should have seen through the camo paint. Isakson's mobile rang. He glanced at the name on the screen and jumped up. It was the most animated I'd ever seen the guy. Lab results, maybe? Or a hit on the APW? I watched for a moment, then went back to the posts. My husband was right. The police did want to speak to me, and I told them exactly what he asked me to. He was so sweet, phoning afterwards to see how I was and how it had all gone. Taking my calls even when he was busy, and I know he doesn't like to be disturbed. Taking my calls even when he was busy. Harper's wife had phoned when Ruddock and I first interviewed him. Was that what she was referring to? I looked up, raking my hands through my hair. The roots were greasy. It could do with a wash. Isakson was over by the window, still on the phone, gnawing his bottom lip. His shoulders were hunched, his neck bent. Not good news then. Had Tech come up empty on the car? Or maybe there was an anomaly with the blood work? I couldn't hear him from where I was sitting, but I could see his mouth working. I watched his lips move. I never did like to wait for news.
I see, he was saying. But the tamoxifen's not agreeing with her. The nausea's terrible, and she's having these awful sweats. Get soaked through. I'm changing her pajamas 3 times a night.
Tamoxifen? I googled it under the table on my phone, curious. Tamoxifen is a hormonal therapy drug that blocks the action of estrogen. It is used to treat breast cancer in pre- and post-menopausal women. The medication is typically taken daily for up to 5 years. And he said he was changing her pajamas. He wasn't a nurse, which meant... The fog cleared. The drive to quit smoking, his excess stomach acid, the permanent sad sack face. It all made sense. His wife had breast cancer, and things weren't looking good. Duncan's death was sudden, literally a bullet out of nowhere. It felled me completely. 2 years on, I'm still struggling to come to terms with what happened and what I've lost. Isakson had all that in store for him. But unlike me, he knew what lay ahead. He didn't just have his pain to deal with. He also had his dread. We'd been pushing against each other this whole case, treading on each other's shoes, winding each other up. Only now did I realize how much we actually had in common. He and Harper were another matter, though.
He gets this look sometimes. A look of absolute hate. It makes me freeze. I mean, I literally can't move, not even swallow.
While Donald Isakson had been caring for his dying wife, Dan Harper had been terrorizing his. Chapter 113. I went back to the posts. Given what we knew, Sarah Harper could well be a goner by now. But there was a chance she might still be alive. And although it was a slim one, given the evidence left at the house, what she'd written was our best hope of persuading her husband to tell us what he'd done with her. The forum entries were as good as a diary in terms of getting to know the person we were looking for. Victimology made easy. I think it'd be different if I had someone to talk to. She was socially isolated, thanks to Harper's best efforts to keep her to himself. Typical abuser behavior. The forum was her only outlet and connection to other people with similar problems, which explained why her entries were often so long and rambling. She had nowhere else to unload. The posts themselves were self-deprecating cries for attention. The language suggested an upbringing in the States, and if she was new to the UK, that would have increased her sense of isolation. However, the way she wrote implied both intelligence and higher education, which normally produces confidence, and yet she clearly had none. How long had Harper been undermining her? What might she have been like without him in her life? "Have you seen this?" I said, glancing up. "He's been with her." "I think Shapiro's right." I dipped my head at Big Daddy. "I think she might have known about the affair with Pejman, but it doesn't sound like he was the only one fooling around."
"You're talking about this Noah person she's mentioned," said Isakson.
"Exactly." It wasn't such a leap, nor was it beyond the wit of man, to see how a woman with low self-esteem and cut off from the world might have fallen prey to a Romeo offering her a bit of kindness. But who was he, and where would Sarah have met him? Not at a neighbourhood shindig, that's for sure.
"Where are you going with this?"
"Could be that's where Harper's emasculation stems from. He thought he had his little woman under his thumb. It wouldn't have done much for his manhood to find out she was cheating on him."
"But he was at it too," said Frost, as if that made a difference.
"One rule for him, another for her," I said. "And anyway, we don't know who was unfaithful first. If it was the wife, the business with Pejman may have been less about Harper getting his rocks off and more about him wanting his own back. The question is, how far did he go to get his revenge?"
Chapter 114.
It sounded like Harper was at the root of many of his wife's problems. Certainly her eating disorder and alcoholism were spiralling in response to what was going on at home. But we'd only heard one side of the story, and as Jack says, there are always three versions. His, hers, and the truth. How would Harper have seen things? If he really was the control freak Sarah made him out to be, his wife's boozing and bulimia would have been anathema to him. He'd have been repulsed by her lack of self-discipline and her mental disorder. Her affair may well have emasculated him, but the murders weren't just about anger. They were also about the need to dominate. In killing women who reminded him of his wife, he could have been trying to achieve the ultimate act of control. Mastery over a woman who had none over herself? But if so, where did the crucial part of the signature fit in? Cutting out his victim's wounds. If this was about his wife's demons, wouldn't the throat have made more sense? Or the mouth? "We need to push Harper on his relationship with his wife," I said. Only he could fill in the gaps.
"We also need to find out why he was tracking her," said Isakson, looking up from his phone. It had just buzzed. "That was tech. Seems Harper downloaded a GPS app. He's been monitoring his wife's movements for weeks."
I thought back to Thursday afternoon, when the woman in the Paddington coat approached me outside the yard on my way back from the interview with Pejman's sister, and how Harper had rocked up out the blue, claiming he was in the area. Could the woman have been Sarah? If so, what Isakson had just said would certainly explain how he'd happened to pitch up at the same time. Did he think she suspected him? The forum post suggested she was questioning him over the alibi. Was he worried she was going to land him in it? I remembered the look in her eyes. The woman had been bricking it. In her posts, she said she wanted to do the right thing. Had Harper put a stop to that? For so long, I'd thought the killer was watching me, but I wasn't his focus. His wife was. The info he'd downloaded about me had nothing to do with me being a target. He was a lawyer, used to doing research and making sure of his facts. He'd been doing the exact same thing I used to do when I was on a mission. Reconnaissance on the people I was up against. "We need to project the blame onto Harper's wife," I said now, "just like we did when we interviewed Fontaine. This guy's all about power. We need to take that away from him. Once we've